from Tukito LLC. It's Keto Woman Podcast with Daisy Brackenhall.
Hello, Keto Lovelies. I'm Daisy Brackenhall, and I've spent most of my life struggling with my weight and confidence, and have always had a difficult relationship with food. Even when I finally got to my target weight, after weight loss surgery and eating low carb, I couldn't maintain it and I was miserable. Keto has given me the freedom to fall in love with food again, without the constant gain, loss, guilt, virtue cycle of before. Health and happiness is where it's at now. Running on fat. Welcome to the Keto Woman Podcast. Each week I'll be chatting to inspirational women, maybe even the odd man, to discover the secrets to their success so that I can share them with you. So what is keto? Keto is a way of eating that enables you to switch your body's main fuel source from sugar to fat. Who doesn't want to be a fat burner, right? But how do we achieve this? A great place to start is by keeping carbs to 20 grams or less per day, so things like leafy greens and above ground vegetables, plus some nuts and seeds, and the incidental carbs you find in things like dairy. Moderate protein, scale to your lean body mass, and then fat to satiety. Once you're in the swing of things, you can tweak it to suit you. Make your own personalised keto. I'll be asking my guests each week what their keto looks like, to show you just how flexible and fabulous this way of eating can be. I'm not a doctor, and most of my guests won't be either, so we can't give you medical advice. It's always best to work with your own doctor, because they know you and your medical history, and so have access to the bigger picture. I need to take a moment to thank some fabulous people who've helped me bring this episode to you today by making a pledge at my Patreon page. So, headlining the show this week are Tom Seast, Siobhan Huggins, Cheryl Miller, Kat Gerber, Jackie Clark, and Kirsten McCallan. It means the world to me. Thank you. Do you want to help me make more episodes and hear your name here at the top of the show? Please head to my Patreon page at patreon.com/ketowomen or hit the support button on the Keto Woman Podcast website. This week, we welcome back extraordinary woman, Taffany Elrod. Taffany is a professional chef and culinary instructor located in New York City and New York's Hudson Valley. With over 15 years of professional culinary experience, she has cooked and taught many culinary styles with a special interest in food for health and culinary traditions. Most recently, she taught professional cooking for veterans returning to the workforce in New York City before opening a small restaurant with her husband in New York's Hudson Valley. Inspired by her success with her own ketogenic, low-carb, high-fat diet, she launched a cooking website called Keto Cooking School, where she shares recipes and techniques and plans to explore the connection between traditional, classical, and the ketogenic way of eating. I always have great fun talking to Taffany, and hope you enjoy this special St. Valentine's edition as much as I enjoyed recording it. Welcome back to the Keto Women Podcast, Taffany. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Daisy. Thank you. It's wonderful to be back and a pleasure as always.
Yeah, it always is. We always have a blast, don't we, when we get together?
Yes, we do.
So we thought we would do a run-up to St. Valentine's. So this will be coming out on the Friday before St. Valentine's. I think it's on a Wednesday this year. Not sure. So We're in the week before anyway.
Yes, sounds about right.
With some suggestions of food and drink that would be nice to have on that day.
Yes, absolutely. Valentine's Day in the States here is quite hedonistic. A lot of chocolate, a lot of champagne and wine, and a lot of delicious foods that I guess are considered to be aphrodisiacs.
All the good stuff to get you going.
That's right. All the good stuff. And the sweets might be a little bit different if you're keto-fied, but the beauty of it is there's lots of good fat, right? So we can enjoy those delicious things and just make them keto-friendly.
You were saying that it's known for being quite hedonistic, but often those things are the things that we tend to eat anyway. So
yeah,
the butter, like you say, the butter and the chocolate and the rich foods.
Yes.
Well, sort of, yeah, so almost every day for us, but we're going to make it that bit right. special.
That's right.
So let's kick off with some drinks. That's often how most people start the evening.
That's right.
So we were going to chat about some suggestions of what to have that's the most keto friendly when it comes to alcohol.
Right.
What would you start with?
Well, I would most likely just start with, I don't know if it's the most keto friendly, but it's definitely Valentine's friendly, a good glass of dry champagne or maybe Prosecco. And we were talking about it. I like to just drop in a raspberry or, you know, a lovely couple red berries to give it a little color and, you know, make it festive. And I like berries and everything. I just like an excuse to put raspberries and everything.
It does make it look fancy, doesn't it? And I've discovered that using frozen ones. So you keep it nice and chilled as well.
That's
and it
right.
really does impart that flavor. Yes. And it's a bit like, it becomes like, well, it's a keto friendly Kir Royale, basically. So
yeah,
instead of
right.
putting that sickly, you know, sweet syrup in to make
right.
make the flavor, you just drop a fresh raspberry or blackberry or whatever you like in there. And it does
That's
really
right.
infuse through the bubbles, doesn't it? It's delicious.
Yeah, absolutely. Sort of like, you know, that infused water that everyone's been on about, but better.
But better, of course.
Yeah.
Champagne's always a better option.
Right. And, you know, again, it is Valentine's Day, so, you know, a little champagne must be in order. If you drink. If you don't drink, that's okay too.
And you're basically just on the label, you're looking out for dry or
brut is
what would often be on there. Yeah.
That's right.
I don't know what kind of range you have there in America, but here you would see brut or du would be the other end, and Mulier, which would be even further down the other end, which would be like a super sweet that,
right.
that you don't want anything to do with. But usually they're brut or du, and the du is the slightly sweeter.
Yeah, that's right. And it should be the same here for the most part. So yeah, definitely looking for brut.
So a nice glass of champagne is the perfect choice. But if you're either going to start with wine or go on to wines, what would be your favorite choice for a white and a red wine?
Well, you know, it's funny. I haven't really investigated wine that much when it comes to keto options. Oddly enough, my favorite white wine used to be Gewürztraminer.
Yes, I do rather like that, but it is crazy sweet, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah,
it's a
sweet.
Lovely dessert wine.
Yeah, so that's not a good option. I would have to think, you know, much further. When it comes to dry whites, and it's funny, I don't have a lot to say on the topic. I need to investigate further.
I tell you what you might like then, actually, because comes from a similar region, and it's a white wine that I discovered here in France. I was always a fan, and I still am, of Italian white wines. Mm-hmm. You tend to get, you know, a nice dry Pinot Grigio or something like that. But here in France, and I've lived here for about 15 years now, it's very difficult to get any other wine other than French wine. They're very big on that. They only sell their own stuff
right.
in general. So I've had to find French white wines that I like. And in general, before, I found them not dry enough. But from the Alsace region, which is this where the Gewürztraminer comes
yeah.
from, is a really nice Riesling. And
okay,
we often
yeah.
think of Riesling as being a bit sweet. If you go into Germany, it's super sweet. But in Alsace, it's lovely and dry. But it has that slight sort of
almost floral or...
Yeah, and it's kind of a bit of a... Gewürztraminer is a little bit spicy, isn't it, I find. So it almost has that. So it's a nice choice, Riesling. And the other one that's the region here that you can always rely on for white and red is Burgundy.
Right, of course.
They tend to be the most expensive, but often also the most delicious. So, you know, a lovely Chablis, for example, from the Burgundy region. Really, really nice. Or, you know, you can go down into, say, the Bordeaux region and get things like, you know, some Sauvignon Blanc is a good all-rounder dry.
Yes.
But the reds as well, there's a particularly nice red from the Burgundy region, which I like. I like the Beaujolais. I think I'm a real fan, actually, of dry wines, whether they're white or red.
Yes.
And the Beaujolais, not the Nouveau, but the ones that are a little bit more aged. There's one called Morgan, which is delicious. It's one of the ones that's aged a bit longer, sort of 4 to 10 years. But it has this lovely, very light, very dry, slightly peppery flavor to it.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And it's delicious. And it's light enough that it goes with anything. So if you're a red wine drinker and, you know, you want something to go with seafood, it works.
Yeah,
so those are my recommendations anyway, but
well they sound good to me. I mean, you know, I need to, shame on me, I need to be a bit, do my homework a bit better on the updating my wine selection.
I mean, to be honest, a lot of people on keto, I mean, we, you know, tend to avoid, you know, wine and other alcohol for the most part, I suppose. But it's, you know, it's nice, isn't it, on a special occasion, if you're partial to a tipple, but it's working out, isn't it, which are the best choices.
Yes, and it feels more special than when you do have it, if you've been avoiding it.
Exactly.
You know. And of course, oddly enough, you know, what, just a couple sips may have a better effect than they used to.
I was going to say, you do have to watch it though, especially if you haven't had much since starting keto,
yeah,
and you think, oh yeah, you know, St. Valentine's or Christmas or whatever it is, I'm going to have my typical amount to drink that I had before keto. Well,
right.
Watch it.
Yeah.
Slow down, because
it's funny. It's really
on
true.
The floor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Goes to your head very, very quickly, doesn't
it? A one drink drunk. Yeah.
Very cheap date.
Yeah. So yes. But again, you know, at least when you enjoy it, it's a choice to really indulge and enjoy it. And that's what, you know, that's what Valentine's Day is about, right? Indulging.
Exactly. I do have a little cocktail that I can offer up. And it's something that I had in Paris years ago. And I completely forgot the name, but I've tried to reproduce it at home since. And I think very, well, as it is good on keto, but there was probably a sugar syrup in it that you could easily either leave out or put some sweetener in if you wanted to. And because I couldn't remember the name, it was something that I put in a recipe book that I put together for my brother's 30th birthday. And he just had his daughter called Rudy. So I called it the Miss Rudy. So
it's, okay.
The cocktail is called the Miss Rudy. It's basically vodka, so keto friendly.
Yeah.
And the one I had was actually the bison vodka, which has this bison grass in that gives it a slightly sort of distinctive, slightly aniseedy flavor. But you can use any vodka.
Yeah.
Vodka, some fresh raspberries, some fresh lime and soda water, and you just sort of mush it up and mix it together, and it's nice and light and fresh and delicious. And like I say, if you've got a really sweet tooth, you could put a bit of sweetener in there.
Yeah,
but it looks pretty. It's like you were saying about putting the raspberry in the champagne, it looks pretty and tastes pretty delicious.
Yeah, it sounds lovely. Sounds right up my alley, like my sort of thing. I'll have to try it.
When we get together, we'll have to partake of some Miss Rudy's.
Right, maybe there'll be the keto woman cocktail now.
Good idea, yeah. Why not?
Right.
So let's move on to some food.
Yes.
What would you suggest we serve up for that special meal?
Well, of course, it depends on your taste, and it depends on how much cooking you would like to do. But it's a holiday that has become, like I said, sort of centered around, you know, love and sensuality and sharing. And so food that is rich and indulgent and sensual and that we can use our hands and, you know, maybe lick our fingers and things like that are called for. So, of course, anything that you can dip in melted butter is always wonderful, whether that be steamed asparagus or some beautiful artichokes and, you know, dip them in butter and bite the leaves, and food that you can share with someone if you're sharing with somebody, handheld food, shrimp, all the seafood, of course, is considered, you know, especially oysters are known, but, you know, most seafood is considered to be an aphrodisiac, so shellfish especially.
That's the typical, isn't it? The
right.
Oysters and champagne.
Yeah, oysters and champagne.
But not to everyone's taste. I mean, no. I must admit, I have tried oysters, but I'm not a huge fan. But I can see the whole reason why they'd be described as an aphrodisiacal food. The look of them, the sharing, the sliding down your throat, the rest of it. You know, I mean, you know where
Again,
I'm going.
It's very much, you know, your senses are very much involved. You know, if you're not in love with oysters, you could do raw clams as well, you know, or you could have champagne and caviar, or, you know, something like good old fashioned fondue that, you know, melted cheese. If you're not into raw oysters, melted cheese is also very lovely and luscious and textural, and, you know, you can dip anything you'd like in there. And of course, we were going to be talking about chocolate, and just melted chocolate is wonderful as a fondue and to dip in. But, you know, I mean, you can even sort of finger paint with it, so to speak. You know, I mean, it's just so much, it's so delightful to work with, and you know, and so, so luxurious. So, there's so many good things. But I was looking to see what were some other foods that were considered aphrodisiacs. And it was kind of, you know, you find lists and pretty much you can find any food on earth, as, you know, someone seems to think it's considered an aphrodisiac, but obviously chocolate, but also things like chili peppers, avocados, pine nuts, arugula, which I found interesting.
Pine nuts. I wonder what the thinking behind pine nuts is.
I'm not sure. Maybe it's
something.
Yeah, I would think so. And maybe because, you know, they're maybe something to do with sort of, you know, reproduction or fecundity. I don't know. Maybe, you know, because of how they are the seed of them, those pine cones. I have no idea. But I thought it was interesting. And they must have some sort of, you know, maybe there's zinc, I think it was. I think they have zinc that's considered, right, you know, to be helpful in that department. and artichokes and strawberries. And interesting also olive oil. I thought that was interesting. But that was the new one. That I love olive oil. I think it's amazing as a food, as a heat source, as a light source, you know, as something fundamental. So that was interesting too.
And could almost again, be getting back to the old finger painting there.
Right. Or like you were, you know, you had mentioned a nice vinaigrette, you know, so if that's full of olive oil, maybe even a little chili pepper. Obviously, you know, chili peppers offer a lot of physical sensation and they, you know.
I was going to say, it's the things that hit your senses, isn't it? I mean, globe artichokes are more often served up here, actually, with a rich vinaigrette than butter. I like them. Well, I mean, I like anything with butter, but it's a nice alternative. Or, you know, you could have the two next to each other, couldn't you?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And that would work very well. I was just thinking you could have this platter, couldn't you, in front of you of these different foods with the couple of bowls of dipping sauces.
Yeah.
But I was just thinking, you know, a lovely steak that had been cooked and then cut up into strips. Again, that you could then, you have this whole platter that you eat with your hands. So,
right.
You know, you've prepared
right.
it and
exactly.
cut it up so that all of it can just be,
absolutely.
You know, you use your fingers to feed yourself, to feed your partner.
That's right. One of my husband's very favorite meals is just shrimp and steak.
Mm.
He loves, he cooks the steak and, you know, has the shrimp cooked in the steak fat and he's happy with that and, you know, nothing else. And again, you know, eating it with his hands. So, you know, and that can be just that on its own, you know, it could be a wonderful meal and romantic and, you know, eat with their hands or feed your, you know, your buddy, whoever you may be with. You know, it doesn't have to be a big undertaking, and it doesn't have to be really extravagant or really outrageous. It can be, and that's fun too, but of course, it, you know, it's the spirit of the meal, whatever it is, that is something that you can share or enjoy. And
exactly. It's that, you know, I mean, all the things we've spoken about so far are actually pretty quick and easy to prepare.
Yeah.
It's right. All about how you're presenting them and how you go about eating them that is going to turn that quite simple but rich and delicious fare into an eating experience.
Yes, absolutely. I don't think anybody wants to spend all day, you know, say, well, I slaved in the kitchen all day. You know, happy Valentine.
Yeah.
Maybe there's probably not a lot of things less romantic than that. and that comes from somebody who cooks all the time.
Of course.
You know, you might want to have a little time to concentrate on, you know, doing your hair or something else. So, yeah, absolutely. Make some, and that's the other, of course, lovely thing about if you do, you know, do some seafood or fillet or what have you, you know, that it's quick. It could be quick and simple and cold, you know, cold seafood, cold shrimp, again, those oysters on half shell, whatever it may be.
Yeah, a lot of these things, actually, you could even prepare them, you know, earlier in the day or even some things the day before so that just, you know, warm things up and serve them up and away you go.
Absolutely. Have you?
Well, yummy. We've done the main course. Let's move on to some dessert.
Yeah. Well, on that topic, so one of my favorite things always, and now it's easily made, you know, friendly, is chocolate dipped anything really, but chocolate dipped berries, strawberries, raspberries. I actually really love chocolate dipped raspberries. And you were mentioning the frozen berries for the cocktails or for the, you know, champagne, but actually if you freeze raspberries and dip them in a couple of coatings of chocolate, you know, they defrost in there and it's almost like, you remember the old fondant covered chocolate cherries, you know, it's liquefied in there. So when you bite into it, it sort of bursts or explodes, you know, and it's almost like a liqueur. Those are amazing. And you
that's,
know,
again, that's such a good idea. So the fact that it's frozen will instantly sort of harden the chocolate a bit, but and the heat of the chocolate at the same time will defrost the raspberries.
Right.
What a great idea.
And they, you know, if you coat them well, they need a couple coatings of chocolate. So then you know, you can keep them that way. But again, so when you bite into it, you know, it's almost like, and if you wanted to, you could even add, you know, a little touch of sweetener, or you know, you could add a little vodka in there, whatever it is, and you know, make sort of an alcohol bung.
Yummy. So those you could prepare beforehand, or just like with the first course with the dipping sauces, you could make a dipping chocolate sauce and have a platter of different berries and maybe some nuts and things as well. And
oh yeah, absolutely, you know,
and dip them in there. And what would you literally just melt chocolate to use for that? Or
well, you, obviously, like anything else, you want a good quality, either very dark chocolate with minimal sugar, or if you have a sugar-free chocolate you like, you know, with a high cocoa mass, hopefully at least above 65. And if you want to keep it melted and dip in it, you know, you can, first of all, you can have a little warmer. A lot of people have a fondue warmer, chocolate warmer, but it helps to add a teaspoon or two of coconut oil or a little butter, you know, some sort of fat. Coconut oil works really well. That will help to keep it smooth and keep it from seizing up, melted. So you melt it together and gently stir it up, and then you can keep it warm longer without it seizing up on you, so you can dip in it. And
oh, so, right, I see. Yeah, good tip. And that's, I'm just thinking of, I've got this vision of those chocolate fountains you get.
Yeah.
I mean, they're disgusting. They're absolutely loaded, I think, with sort of horrible vegetable oils and things, aren't they? But that's how they keep it moving, isn't it?
Well, yeah, that's probably not much chocolate in it, which
no, exactly, that's disgusting. Yeah. But the same sort of principle of just adding that extra bit of fat.
The same principle applies. So if you have a typical chocolate bar here is about 100 grams, about 3.5 ounces. And for that, you know, you could use a small amount, a teaspoon or two of coconut oil. If you don't want the coconut flavor, it's not with dark chocolate, you won't taste it a lot anyway, but you know, you can get a somewhat refined coconut oil if you don't want that flavor, and you melt that together, and that'll help to keep it smooth and keep it, you know, moving.
Yummy.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
and then yeah, you can
dip and feed. Yeah. Your berries, your favorite kinds of, you know, macadamia nuts are great, of course. And I hear tell that some people even like to dip bacon in their chocolate. So, you know, whatever works.
Why not?
Whatever
bacon,
works for you.
Bacon's
yeah.
good for everything, isn't it?
Right.
So, why not? Well, I have some chocolate tarts that I made that were quite easy. That's my motto, really, when it comes to cooking, is to make them as easy as possible. I have this really cute silicone mold, which has, I think it's about 8 on the sheet, little hearts.
Okay.
It's one of my little purchases. Perfect, you know, for making something cute for Valentine's Day. Okay, so yes, you take these molds and you make a shortbread mix, basically.
Okay.
Really straightforward. And any flavorings you like, and I've got some different recipes that I posted a while back on the forum, and I'll put a link to those. But the basic mix that I use is, and again, I'm going to do this in metric because that's what I'm used to, but I'll put some imperial alternatives up.
Yeah, sure.
In the show notes or something. But it's 100 grams of almond flour and then about 45 to 50 grams of butter. So you're basically half fat to the almond flour, and then about a tablespoon of sweetener. And it depends on your sweetener. That would be something like a Truvia type blend.
Yeah.
I always find when you're using straight erythritol, you have to use maybe even twice as much as something that has the stevia in it.
Yeah.
But I just taste it as I go, to be honest, to get the level of sweetness. But that's about it. And that's your basic sort of shortbread mix. And this time what I did was I added some grated chocolate in there. Or you could put some cocoa powder in to give you a much more, if you wanted it chocolate all the way through. I quite like the mix of the two. I don't really like to go all in chocolate. So, but it had this bit of chocolate running through with the grated chocolate. Shove that all in the food processor and blitz it till it starts coming together in clumps, mm-hmm. but hasn't formed one big clump. If you're going to make them into cookies, it's actually useful to just keep the blender on until you get this great big lump, and then you roll it into a sausage and you can cut cookies out. But I wanted to be able to press it into the mold. So I pressed it down into the bottom of the little individual molds and cooked it in the oven, a sort of medium oven. It was about 160 for about 15 to 20 minutes, just until they were cooked.
Yeah.
Take it out, let it cool for a while. And in the meantime, made the chocolate mix to go on the top, which was, and this would work for 2 to 4 portions, depending how big you like your portions. But with my silicone molds, it was enough for 4. Now, the shortbread mix that I made, that actually did enough for 8. But to make a smaller quantity would probably be too small. You could do it by hand, but to do it in a food processor, there probably wouldn't be enough in there. So you can just make half and make the rest into cookies, or ball it up and put it in the freezer for another time. But then the chocolate mix is basically equal parts chocolate and butter. And I used 50 grams of each, melted them together, mixed up well, took it off the heat, allowed it to cool a bit. And then I took cream, twice the amount. So that was 100 grams together of the chocolate and the butter.
Right.
And I used 200 mil of cream.
Okay, so it's double the amount of both the combined chocolate and butter. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's a 1 to 2 of your chocolate and butter mix to your cream. And I also had a bit of sweetener in there. I think I put about a tablespoon of erythritol in. The chocolate I use is quite a high percentage. I think that was a 90% I used. So obviously it has got a bit of sugar in there, but not much. Mixed in the cream, and it forms this quite like a sort of a thick mousse. and pressed in to the molds on top of the shortbread mix and smoothed off the top and leave them to chill overnight. And then you turn them out the next day and you've got this lovely biscuit base with chocolate, this sort of, it's like a really sort of solid, rich chocolate mousse on the top.
Yeah.
And then top it off with some cream, some raspberries, toasted almond flakes, some grated chocolate, whatever you like. You know, you can decorate it up however you feel like doing, but delicious and quite easy, you know. Yeah. not as easy as melting a bit of chocolate and dipping berries in, but it didn't take long.
No, I mean, that sounds quite achievable, and they sound great. I mean, I love shortbread. I'm a big fan of chocolate mousse, and they sound quite lovely.
And I tell you what I think would go really well on top of that, your mascarpone cream that you were telling me about before. So tell us how to make that, because I think that would be a great addition, a nice ball of that on the top.
Yeah, I think you're right. And again, this is something that's also very simple and that you can make ahead and just chill it. And it's really delicious. You need about 8 ounces of mascarpone cheese. And you need about 8 ounces of heavy whipping cream. You can use any amount of sweetener you'd like, which is nice. This is very adjustable. You could make it without any sweetener and add berries if you don't do sweeteners. I used about, altogether about a quarter cup, but that came out quite sweet. I would say maybe 2 tablespoons if I were to make it now.
That's the thing, isn't it? You taste it as you make it. That's what, yeah. I mean, that's exactly what I did with, well, actually both with the shortbread mix and the chocolate mix on the top, is that you put in the minimum that you think you'll need, taste it, which, you know, is fine when you're making, yeah, something delicious of chocolate. Quite happy, right, to taste it as you go. And right, just keep adding it till you get to the level,
yeah,
of sweetness that you want. Because you can overdo it quite easily, can't you, with sweetener? And then it doesn't taste too good.
Yeah, you absolutely can. But also, everybody has a very different taste when it comes to sweetness. I don't, even before I went keto, I wasn't big on very, very sweet things. I liked, you know, just a minimal amount of sweetness. Some people really like, you know, their sweets to be sweet. So, you know, you just make it according to, and of course, everybody has a different sweetener that is sweetening to a different level as well. So you really, you know, it really depends. You know your sweetener probably better than I do. So for to put this together, it's so simple. You simply whip up your mascarpone, you know, as you would whipped cream. You add your little bit of sweetener. Obviously, confectioner style is best for this because it won't become grainy. If you have granulated sweetener, I would add all the sweetener to the heavy cream and let it dissolve some. But if you're doing, I did half and half so that when I mix it together, so for instance, a tablespoon of my sweetener into the mascarpone, the 8 ounces of mascarpone, whip it up until it's quite fluffy. It has a thick, dense texture, so it's not going to whip up like a whipped cream would, but you know, it will incorporate air and volume fluff up. And I added about half a teaspoon of vanilla extract, and I actually scraped the seeds from a vanilla bean. Right now, the price on vanilla beans is astronomical, so you may or may not want to add that. But if you have one lying around, you can, you know, it looks nice, and of course, that's always a nice addition. It tastes good.
I don't know if you can get it there, or you must be able to if you can get it here, but I've found something online that's just called vanilla powder.
Yeah.
And I have absolutely a feeling, because it doesn't taste as rich and as good as vanilla seeds, I've got a feeling it might be the pods after they've been scraped out for seeds,
yeah, right,
that have,
right,
gone on for the expensive products,
right,
is that they then dry it out and turn it into this powder. But it's not bad. It's better, I think, than vanilla essence, which often has a, I don't know, not, I'm not a huge fan of it. You know, it's nice enough, but not as nice as the seeds that are in the middle. And it's just sort of a decent halfway house. I know that I've used the whole pod before when I've been infusing cream to make,
yeah,
ice cream,
yeah,
and I leave it all in there. And then I actually just put a stick blender in and blend up with the pod in there as well.
Okay,
and it really,
yeah,
does add quite a lot of flavor.
Oh,
but,
yeah,
but it's something to look out for. Vanilla powder, it's called.
Yeah.
And it's pretty nice. So you can just throw a bit of that in, and a lot cheaper than vanilla beans.
Yeah. If you can't find the beans, or if you don't have access to a vanilla extract that isn't, some of them have sugar, And some people don't use the alcohol, so the powder works well, you know, for that too. But keep an eye on the powder too, because sometimes you can find one that has additives in that as well, you know, starch or sugar in that as well. So keep an eye out for one that's not adulterated.
Yeah, I've never found a vanilla essence actually that doesn't have a small amount of sugar.
Yeah, I have one, but it's professional and it's very expensive. And it has a great flavor. And it's very high in alcohol. maybe that's why. And it's really expensive. So, you know, I use it, but that if you're not buying that, then, you know, it's hard to find them without sugar if you just shop in the grocery store or whatever. Yeah. This one actually has a warning that it's highly flammable.
Oh, blimey.
So that should tell you something about the alcohol content. but back to my recipe. So then once you've whipped up your mascarpone with, and of course you could use any other flavoring you'd prefer, but vanilla is lovely in this, then you have your chilled whipping cream and you just whip that up to, you know, semi-stiff as you would. Again, you can add it. What I do is I add half the sweetener to that and half the sweetener to the mascarpone. So when I blend them together, the sweetener is distributed throughout. And you can, and I, again, same thing, I add a little bit of the, so half a teaspoon of vanilla to one and half to the other, so that it's distributed. Because then all you do is just simply fold your whipped cream into your mascarpone cream. I add, you know, one scoop at first and blend it in to lighten up the mascarpone a little bit. And then you fold in the rest of your whipping cream. And that's it.
And so it works better to do it that way than to mix them together first and then.
Yeah, I mean, you could do that. You won't get the same volume because the mascarpone is too heavy to whip to that degree. So you'll get more volume and it'll be a little lighter if you whip the cream separately. And the other thing you can do with this actually is if you'd like to, you could make this boozy too. You can add, it'll tolerate probably up to, you know, a couple ounces of a liquor that you'd like, or, you know, something like that. Or if you like to booze it up, you could also, I serve this with berries, and you could macerate some berries in the liquor of your choice and, you know, serve it that way too. But of course, again, you don't have to do that. And you don't have to add any sweetener. If you're a person who doesn't do sweeteners and you're very sensitive to the natural sweetness of things, which, you know, bully for you, you're amazing. Then just, you know, whatever you'd like. A little bit of shaved chocolate, some berries, and this cream is lovely. I mean, you could use this and make it savory too if you wanted to do something savory with it.
It is pretty sweet on its own though, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, depending what you're eating it with, actually, it depends whether you need to sweeten it as well. Yeah. If you were having it with something that was already quite sweet. So say you'd done your macerated berries in some brandy or something, and you'd put some sweetener in that, it would actually be quite nice to offset it with having a cream that was a bit less sweet.
Absolutely. We were talking about finger foods. This also, once you've made this, if you make it, you know, you could dip your berries into this and, you know, just use it as a dip and dip whatever you want into it and, you know, have fun with it that way too. But again, it's, I think, mascarpone's sort of underappreciated, underutilized. It's even though it's a cheese, it behaves more like a cream and it's so delicious.
It does, doesn't it? And it tastes more like cream. It's something that I've discovered since being in France, really, because you can't get double cream here. I'm so used to having double cream that when you whip it up is much stiffer than whipping cream. Or I think probably it's the cream we get here is somewhere between sort of single and whipping. So you can whip it, but it's this very loose structure. Yeah. It's not what I'm used to with double cream, that you get this nice stiff structure that will hold its own. You know, if you were on a pavlova or something.
Right.
But the kind of cream you get here that you'd whip, it would just flop all over the place. So, and I discovered that, yeah, the half and half with the mascarpone and the cream.
Yeah.
I'd always mix them together first and then beaten it up, but that I can see now exactly what you're saying. If you want that slightly lighter structure, is to put them together afterwards. So I will certainly try that next time. But it's the closest thing, and especially with that bit of vanilla, it's the closest thing I've been able to get to replicate double cream here in France.
Which also isn't really a thing in the States either. You know, we have heavy cream. I can get, again, for professional grade, like a higher fat heavy cream that I use, and it so it has more body, and it, you know, it actually starts to almost set up on its own in the container to where it's, you know, almost like making butter by itself. So, you know, I mean, that's slightly, I think it's 40-some% butter fat versus like the 30-some% of a typical cream.
Right, yeah, so that's much more like a double cream. And then, of course, Brits, we just love our cream, and then we go even further than that and get into clotted cream, which can go up into the 60s. 60% fat. I mean, it's just the most incredible stuff.
And rightly so.
And you can make it. Have you ever made it?
No, I never have.
You
I need
do.
To. I never, yeah, I need to.
There's a great video. I will post it with the show notes.
Yeah.
It's absolute food porn. It's erotic watching this clotted cream being made. And then the stuff that comes out at the end, you get this almost like butter crust on the top. And then you break down through and you have this thick, thick cream going down into a more unctuous, slightly more runny cream at the bottom. So you get this whole gradient down, and the flavor, it kind of is somewhere between cream and butter in the flavor. It's so rich and delicious.
Yeah. Mm. You're killing me.
Yeah. You'll have to give it a go and make it.
Yeah, I will. Oh, and you know, that reminds me, I was also thinking of, I'm not like the most decorative, you know, I don't do a lot of cake decorating, things like that. But also, Valentine's Day is a lovely time to break out edible flowers. And I meant to mention that, you know, for decoration, for, you know, so for instance, if you wanted to make your mascarpone cream and steep rose petals in your heavy cream slightly, you know, and it, if it's hot, it won't whip the same, but, you know, decorate it with that or mix that with your berries. Roses are edible, violets, pansies.
Borage flowers are. I'm not quite sure.
And of course, hibiscus. We had talked about that before.
Nasturtiums are nice, not for dessert, but delicious. Got that lovely peppery rocket flavor, both the flowers and the leaves.
Yeah, it doesn't just have to be dessert. I love mixing them into salads.
Me too. They're just
salads.
So pretty. There's a Michelin star restaurant not far from where I am in France, actually, that has its signature dish starter is a sort of a foraged salad, mm-hmm. and it's seasonal, but that has little flowers and things in it.
Yeah,
ever so pretty.
It's beautiful. And I like
and
to
delicious.
Sometimes pull the petals and, you know, and mix them or scatter them. You know, it doesn't have to be the whole flower, especially they're kind of expensive if you know, sometimes to get. So if you just want to get a small amount, but, you know, use them throughout the meal or through
and something
more
like
than one
violets.
Portion.
But I mean, violets and roses have got that lovely sort of flavor. But I have the scented violets here, and when they flower in the spring and it's a hot day and the sun's on them, just walk along and this lovely parma violet smell.
Yeah.
I used to love those little sweets, those parma violet sweets.
Oh,
I don't know if you get them there. My gran used to buy little purple sweets. Delicious. It tastes a bit like soap, but in a good way.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. You know, that was the old days when people had to eat soap for fun, you know. But of course, they were healthier too. So what are you going to do?
Yeah, very nice. And back to the chocolate, you mentioned to me a recipe, and I do like a multi-purpose recipe.
Yeah.
One set of ingredients that you can use and just make different things with it. So tell us about your chocolate ganache mix.
Right. Yeah. Chocolate ganache. I mean, it's funny. A lot of people outside of, you know, who work with food professionally don't seem to know about it. Even though, you know, people now have such access to food and, you know, food knowledge and information. And it's so simple. And it's so lovely. And like you said, it's incredibly versatile. And all it is again, good quality, high, you know, high cocoa mass chocolate cream. And it can be that simple, chocolate and cream. I like to add butter. So it's actually very similar to your chocolate tart. You know, you've in essence made a ganache, except for it has more butter than would be typical. It's a sliding scale of the ratio, depending on what you're using it for. anything from, and it's usually measured by weight. So equal weights of chocolate and heavy cream will work, and that will give you a very stiff ganache. If you do one part chocolate to two parts heavy cream, you know, you'd have a very light one. If you do one part chocolate to half as much cream, you know, you get the idea. I like to work with it. Equal parts is what I like to work with generally for chocolate. So if you've ever had a chocolate truffle, you know, that is ganache. And you can use it as a frosting. You can whip it and use it as an icing. You can use it in its warm liquid state and it makes a beautiful glaze. It's really wonderful. So, and all you have to do, you know, you can complicate it if you'd like to, but all you have to do is take your cream, bring it to a boil, a quick boil, shut it off, and you have your chocolate chopped. You put it in, you allow it to soften a little bit, and you mix it. You don't need a double boiler. You don't need to worry about, you know, and you don't need to worry about seizing your chocolate as long as you're careful with it. So it's really simple to work with. You whisk it together, and then I like to personally, especially if I'm doing truffles, I have room temperature sweet cream butter. After that's been blended together, and when it's not too hot, I add in that butter. So the butter doesn't completely melt. It stays, you know, emulsified, so it has a wonderful texture and a, you know, wonderful mouthfeel, and it sort of lightens it up and freshens it up. I don't know what's the word for it. I love that. So, and then once that's together, you can, at that point, you could, if you had something you want to glaze, you could just pour it over a cake or whatever it is, you can glaze it. You let it set up and you can scoop it to make truffle filling, use it as a cake filling, use it as a layer in. So you could do, you know, chocolate ganache, chocolate mousse, whipped cream on top, you know, and have a sort of death by chocolate sort of a thing.
Yummy. So if you wanted to whip it, that was when you'd have more cream to chocolate and then whip it presumably once it had cooled down.
Yeah. Even if you have, you know, a heavy ratio, you can still whip it as long as it's at room temperature. You would chill it somewhat, let it be at room temperature, and then whip it up. And you'll get a very firm frosting. If you add more cream, it won't be quite as firm. Once you've made it, you'll realize like, oh, I could do this and I could do that. I mean, you know, and you can just eat it with a spoon too. There's no reason not to. Or again, you know, you could whip that up and dip fruit in it or dip nuts in it. I mean, you say you like to have, you know, multi-use recipes or, so, you know, we get caught up in the idea of recipes, but the more versatile your cooking is, the more techniques and, you know, the more formulas you have in your wheelhouse, the more comfortable you'll be and the more creative you can be and the more fun you're going to have and the less time you're going to spend. And that's valid. You know, like, so if you have something that you know you can do, you have those ingredients on hand and you feel excited to, you know, go for it. That's so much better than, well, I think that recipe looks great, but I don't have those ingredients and it's going to take me all day and, you know, on and on and on. If you have the time and you want to do that, that's great. But you shouldn't have to always, you know, feel, and you shouldn't have to always have a recipe. You know, I used to tell my students, you can make music without being able to read or write music. That is a notation system. You can cook without ever looking at a recipe. Let's face it, most of our ancestors did. Recipes aren't cooking. Recipes are a notation system about food. So, you know, don't be afraid. Just get in there, make a mess, burn something.
That's right. I think it's why things that I make often taste slightly different every time, because I rarely make something to a recipe. I have, you know, I have a set of ingredients that I make something with.
Yeah.
Like that, you know, that chocolate tart mix and my, you know, and the shortbread I make. It's always slightly different because I always throw something slightly to use different nuts in there for the nut flour. You know, put different ingredients in the base, make the chocolate topping with different quantities so it comes out with a different texture. And you do just play around with things, don't you? And yeah, I've made truffles before and put some a good glug or two of brandy in, and then you Absolutely. Let it set, and then you boil Absolutely. It up into truffles, and you can roll it in some, or whatever you like, some chopped toasted nuts or mm-hmm. some coconut or cocoa right. powder even.
Cocoa
nice,
powder.
That real bitter.
Well, and it's traditional, right? Because that's what looks like a truffle.
Exactly, yeah.
So, you know, a true truffle. So that's, and it's really sort of like the soul of chocolate. You know, it's almost more chocolate than a chocolate bar. It really is the essence of chocolate to me. It's everything about it that's so, so wonderful. And what does that wonderfulness come back to? Fat. You know, the fat that's the cocoa butter and, yeah.
Exactly. And something, you know, some brandy or some whiskey or something in it. It'd be a lovely way to just finish off the meal, wouldn't it? Present.
Absolutely.
A little plate of truffles.
That's right.
Delicious.
And one or two, you know, if they're rich, one or two is always enough. You know, it's not something you just want to eat a bunch of them. They're just, you know, it should just be that bite that's, you know, gives you everything all at once.
Delicious. Well, that sounds like a lovely meal. I'd like to partake in all of that.
I know, it does sound good, doesn't it?
I assume you'll probably be working. I think it's a busy night in the restaurant, is it, Valentine's?
Well, it can be. You know, it's a little, since we don't do, you know, reservations and sit-down dinners and, you know, it'll be somewhat busy. It'll be somewhat busy. But of course, I will be working. Absolutely. Definitely.
So will you have time to do something a bit special when you get home? Or is it all about just getting to sleep? Thanks. We've had a long day on our feet. All we want to do.
Yeah. No, I mean, you know, I may have time to cook a little something or make a sweet or something like that. We'll see. It really depends on the day. It depends. You know, I'll try to make something the day before or earlier in the day. And as a matter of fact, I think, yeah, it is Wednesday because the day before is Fat Tuesday. So that's right, because that's the beginning of Lent this year, which is a funny coincidence. So, you know, we shall see. We'll probably be a little bit busy on both days. So right now, work always seems to take precedent. You know, someday, hopefully, we'll have a little more lounging time.
Well, I hope you have a lovely day doing whatever you're doing.
That's right.
And enjoy it.
Yes.
So we always wrap up with a top tip. And today, unusually, I've got one. As a long-time singleton, St. Valentine's has been for me one of those days that you either pretend to ignore or get a bit downbeat about and miserable because you know, you haven't got a partner like seemingly everyone else in the whole worldwide has, and it's a bit of a miserable day.
Yes.
So my top tip, if you don't have a romantic partner, is to turn that day into being about you. Romance yourself and have a lovely day doing something you'd like to do, making yourself a lovely meal in the evening, you know, having a glass of wine or two yourself, and make it about loving yourself. Or just finding someone else that you can express your love and appreciation to. So for me, this year, actually, I'll probably be in the UK. It's my mum's birthday is on the 13th, so the day before St. Valentine's. And it's a difficult time for her at the moment. So we're, my brother and sister, we're all trying to make it a special year this year for her birthday. So my Valentine's this year will be showing my love and appreciation for my mum. You know, it doesn't have to be a romantic thing, does it? And you don't have to feel left out. It really can just be a day where you express love and gratitude to somebody else or to yourself because you're fabulous.
So
I just, I don't want it to be, because I know it is a day that some people can feel quite down and left out.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And you don't need to.
No. I've been there as a single person. And you know what's the truth? It can also be that for people who are not single, who, you know, there's a build up to that day, that they begin to feel that there's not romance. No one's, you know, their partner isn't going to do something to knock them off their feet. You know, we build up such a sort of romantic ideal. So the truth is, I think there are people who, with partners, you know, the truth of the matter is, it's a fun day, but guess what? I'll be working. My husband and I will be working. You know, we won't be having some amazing romantic getaway on the back of a horse. You know,
exactly. So, you don't have to be swept off your feet. It can just be, in your case, for example, being really busy is just that moment. That moment, perhaps, you know, at the end of the night when you put your feet up and have a cup of tea and, you know, happy Valentine's Day, I love you. It doesn't have to be a monumental, extravagant. It can be, of course, and it's fabulous if you have the time and the energy and someone to do that with, but it can just be little moments as well.
Absolutely. It's a good time to reflect on being, you know, again, being thankful for your whomever, yourself, your friends, your family, your loved one, your spouse, your children, whoever it may be, you know, and enjoy that we're here together and that what life has to offer, you know, always. I've had some great Valentine's Day with friends. We were single. We were good to each other, you know, and I've had some Valentine's Day all on my lonesome, and that was okay too.
Exactly. Just make it a day when you show the love.
That's right. Absolutely. That's right.
Well, it's been wonderful getting my hands dirty with some finger-licking food ideas with you, Taffy. I hope you have a lovely, lovely Valentine's Day.
Absolutely. It's been delightful sharing the love with you. Happy Valentine's.
Thank you. To get the resources and links from the show, please go to ketowomenpodcast.com. Are you my next extraordinary woman? Maybe you've got an idea for a show, a topic you want to hear about. Let me know how I can tickle your earbuds by dropping me a line at daisy@ketowomenpodcast.com. If you fancy joining me on this truly exciting adventure and want to help me create new episodes, please go to my Patreon page at patreon.com/ketowoman. Or you can simply hit the support button on the Keto Women podcast website. It's thanks to the two keto dudes that I'm hosting this podcast, so please consider heading to their Patreon page at patreon.2keto.com and help them bring you more podcasts like this one. Please help other people hear about and find this podcast by reviewing the show on iTunes, Facebook, or your podcatcher. Every star, preferably 5, of course, and review really does help. Also, it doesn't go unnoticed by me, the people who regularly like, share, and comment on my posts. It really makes a difference to increase my audience, and your support means the world to me. Thank you. Today's quote is from my fellow Brit, Shakespeare nonetheless. If music be the food of love, play on. Bye-bye, keto lovelies.